of this protein are in contact. And if they are not in contact, it's zero. And there are different ways you can define contact, such as look at the distance between the C alpha atoms of AI and AJ, and if that distance is less than a threshold, then they are in contact. Or you look at the distance between the two closest heavy atoms, heavy anything but hydrogen, in an all-atom description, and if it's less than some threshold, then these two amino acids are in contact. But it's the basic entity that we deal with is the amino acid, is the resin. Okay, so it's a matrix of ones and zeros. Yeah? The one that I will be using in this talk is this. Is the distance between the central carbon atoms of these amino acids. Okay, so just to see what these things look like, this is again Crumbin, and this is the ribbon diagram, and this is the contact map. This thickening along the diagonals, these are the alpha helices, and usually you pick up bits and pieces that are going like this, which are beta sheets, or going like that, which are parallel beta sheets. So from a contact map, if you have the eye for it, you can read off the structure fairly easily. Okay. Huh? This one had only two alpha helices. No, I mean, everyone is in contact with his first and second neighbor by my definition of contact. But in alpha helix, it will be also the third row will be there. Now, this is a... Okay, if I get through this transparency, I'll be done in half an hour. The contact map is a reduced representation of the structure. That is, if I give you a contact map, there is a very large number of microscopic configurations that are consistent with the same contact map. This said, you can define the following object, which I'll call the free energy of contact map S and sequence A. That is, if you know the sequence and someone tells you this sequence has been tortured into a shape whose contact map is S. Given this information and only this, you can define this free energy in the following way. Sum over all the microscopic configurations of the system, which includes the coordinates of all the atoms of your protein and of the water and of the mitochondria and anything that comes to your mind. All the degrees of freedom in the world are summed over here. The only thing that is kept fixed is, of course, the sequence of your protein and this contact map S. And what this delta is a delta function which says, if your microscopic configuration is consistent with this contact map, then put a 1 here. And if it's inconsistent, put a 0. It's a projection operator. So you sum over all microscopic configurations, everyone gets its proper Boltzmann weight. This is the real, honest-to-God energy of that configuration. And you project onto those configurations for which this is the contact map. What you get is a number, and that number I call it e to the minus h of s. And this is the free energy of this protein in that contact map. Okay. The way I defined it, the most probable configuration will have the lowest value of h, and if the most probable contact map is the native one, then if you want the native map, you have to minimize H. No question about dynamics or anything else. By this definition, the most probable contact map has the minimal value of H. Okay, so this is easy to define and rather impossible to calculate. So now come all kinds of approximations, and the approximation that I'll be concerned with is this one, is the pairwise approximation to this complicated function. I don't have your skills. I mean, if you want to sum over all water molecules and all everything, the way I said.
Yes, no, that was not the real meaning of my question. You expect that for a given compact map, you will not have millions of chains that you can go, which will give you, okay, the continuum.
Well, you have to do a restricted partition sum.
Yeah, over the wall.
Okay, so And I can think easily of simpler problems where still I don't know how to do it. Okay? So anyway, in any case, this is an approximation to that function. That function exists. Had I known it and were I able to minimize it, I could solve the problem. But I don't know it, and therefore I take a guess. And this is the first trivial guess you can take for that function, and what this says, this is the pairwise contact approximation to the free energy. Okay? This is the subject of my talk. It says the following. Go to this contact matrix, contact map, scan all its elements. If the element ij is 1, then add to the sum a number, w of ai, aj, where ai is the amino acid in position I, and aj is the amino acid in position j. There are 20 amino acids, so this is a 20 by 20 symmetric matrix, which has 210 elements. Does that answer your first question? This is where the 210 comes from. So it's just this sum, which is the energy. For example, in this particular case of Crambin, this is the sequence. The 5-9 element is happens to be 1. It's somewhere here at 5 and 9. And the identity of the two residues is listed here. You can read them off the sequence, 5 and 9. And when you come here, you get a 1 at the position 5, 9. And then you go up into that equation. You say, since it is 1, I have to take this element of W of P and A. So I hope it's clear how this energy is calculated. Okay. Yeah?
I can imagine that sometimes there are half contact or one third contact.
I cannot.
Uh-huh. But could be principle, right?
Well, the way I defined it.
Well, sure, but this
no.
I understand. I don't mean define the calculation, but in reality, S can be anything from 0 to 1.
No, S is 0 or 1. In my definition, and that's the one I'm sticking to. Okay, you can jazz it up in different ways and maybe get there. Yes. Well, the HP model on the left is this is the Hamiltonian. It's not an effective Hamiltonian. This is the Hamiltonian. This is what they do, and then no one has, as far as I know, taken anything more complicated in this. Well, okay, I won't say that. But no, it's not. It's not. This is the HP model. They say this is the Hamiltonian, and instead of a 20 by 20 matrix, it's a 2 by 2 matrix. Otherwise, the same.
Is there some known from biology that if you sum over each row roughly, how many contacts are
there? Yeah, well, if you have a compact structure, you have to have something like, with my definition of contact, something like 8 or 9 residues on the average per contacts per residue. Okay, because of my definition of contact.
It should depend on the size of the residue.
Yeah.
It depends on where you look.
On your definition of contact, first of all. Okay, so these 210 parameters are usually determined in a variety of ways by optimization of or statistical analysis of non-structures and so on. And the literature abounds with such 20 by 20 matrices. And Miyazawa Yernigan is one of them, and they themselves have 5 of these. And the literature is full of these 20 by 20 matrices, which are derived by one set of guys, analyzed by some other set of guys. So there is a whole, I mean, I'm not the only one who's interested in these matrices. Okay. So what have we done? We have proved that it is impossible to find a set of such 210 parameters such that with this form of the energy function, the native map has a lower energy than a set of decoys, even for a single protein. If indeed you could use this approximation to fold proteins, then for a single protein at least you could find a set of parameters such that the native map has a lower energy than any decoy that you could come up with. And we have proved that this cannot be done. Okay, so this is the bottom line of my talk. Yeah.
Let me just try to make sure I understand everything.
Yeah.
The W, in an ideal world, the W would be given to you by some chemist, right? Is that right?
No, in an ideal world, a chemist will tell me that this is a lousy approximation for this, for the contact energy of the protein.
I see. So the chemist would just say that third order term.
Right. Long range term, third order terms, and so on and so forth.
Like
this is not enough. That's right. That's right.
Okay.
Yeah.
So if you try to see if your theorem is still holds, if you have a psychic.
Well, I stopped at this. Well, I'll show you where I stopped. Okay, but at some point you have to stop. Yeah.
And you extend it to W. That's a function of I and J as well as AI.
That's a good point. There are quite a few extensions, and that, in a way, is one of them. And that we didn't. Sorry?
Can you repeat this comment?
For example, if you have two amino acids that are part of an alpha helix, then there is a hydrogen bond between them. And that means that the interaction energy of these two is different than if the same two amino acids are in contact, which is a tertiary contact between an alpha helix and the beta sheet, because there is no hydrogen bond. This is what I understood. If I'm not, then... So in principle, it could be that the value of this number depends not just on the identity of the two amino acids, but also on where in the structure they are. So we did some twists on that. For example, when someone asked me, of course, two amino acids interact differently when they are buried inside in the core, when they are in the surface. So we tried that. Okay, so when they are in the core, it's one interaction, on the surface, it's another. So instead of 210, 420 parameters. Didn't help. Okay, but the result, I think, is, I hope, is clear. Okay, so this result, to get it, is not completely trivial. The first thing you have to do is to generate these decoys, and that's not absolutely simple, because you can go wrong in a variety of ways. Okay, there are two possibilities when you check such an inequality for a bunch of decoys. One possibility is that indeed you find a solution. You find a set of W's of these parameters for which the native one has lower energy than only all your decoys. Well, that can be due, first of all, to the fact that indeed the native map has a lower energy than all the decoys. And what you found is the truth. Another possibility, the more common one, is this. The native one is not the lowest energy. There are lots of structures whose energy is lower than the native one. But when you selected your decoys, you were looking only at these guys. Okay? So it was an unfair competition. When you take... You'd say that someone is the best runner in Santa Barbara. Okay, maybe he is, but if you put him against me and Orlando, then maybe he will win, even though he's not the best runner. So... Sorry? Well, I'll show you in a moment. You have to select competing structures whom you want to test against the native one. And if you selected them in a lousy way, chances are that they are not fair competitors. He will win, but not because he's really the best, but because you just pitted him against really weak guys.
I'm also confused.
Yeah.
The theorem is proved for a specific protein or proved
for one specific protein, that was one, the first thing, then for a family of proteins, the immunoglobulins, that was the second step, and the third step for a whole bunch of 100 proteins.
Right, I see. So first you do it for a specific protein.
Just for one protein. If you cannot do it for one protein, then you should stop. I mean, you should then stop, because if you cannot stabilize one protein, then there's no reason to try to stabilize 10, except if that one is special in some way. And people say, of course, crumbin has disulfide bridge, so you shouldn't take that into account. So you take one which doesn't have.
But the theorem now covers
many. Right. Okay, so this is what the possible situations when you find a solution. The alternative is when yet you don't find a solution. Okay, when you don't find a solution, I think the prevalent situation is this. That indeed, you have shown that the native map is not the one of lowest energy. But some of its competitors, or most of them, or all of them, are non-physical, and I'll explain what I mean by that. And then it's unfair. Then you took that runner, and instead of having him compete with the good runners in Santa Barbara, you have him compete with a motorcycle. It's unfair. A structure. It's a structure of the same protein. Not the native one, but another structure of the same protein.
It's a different contact.
Well, of course, it's a different structure, a very different structure, you have a different
sequence.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's what you are calling a decoy is a different fold of the same sequence.
That's right.
This is what I want to
say. That is a decoy. Yeah, thanks.
Now, there is no gap of the protein as schematized from the regular. So, already because of that, Shanovich would be an epic.
Shachnovich?
Yeah,
no,
right.
Well, I don't know. Well, okay, but it's a different game. I mean, I'm not asking about gaps. I'm just asking, is there the gap that Shachnovich, the question Shachnovich was asking, how large is this gap? And I don't care, even if it's small, if there is a gap, I'm happy. Okay, so Shachnovich shouldn't worry about this. Okay, so what I claim is that what we have shown is this, that the... Not just that there is no gap. The gap is negative.
There is a lot of stuff there.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. There is not just no... The gap is negative. It has the wrong sign, if you wish. So, and what we claim that the native energy is somewhere here, and there are stuff above it and stuff below it, and no matter how you choose your W's, this is going to be the situation. The native will never go under.
So when you say native in that context, it is the experimentally observed structure.
Native, yeah, that's right. Precisely, the one from the data bank. Okay, so what do I mean by physical decoys? If someone comes to you and gives you a contact map, it's an n by n matrix of ones and zeros. The number of possible maps is e to the n squared, because there are n squared elements and everyone can be one or zero. And number of physical maps goes like e to the n. We have shown this. So the fraction, out of all possible contact maps, the fraction of those that correspond to real physical structures is negligible. Okay? You cannot, if you want to represent my structure as in terms of a contact map, and you put my nose in contact with my back, this is going to be a non-physical map. No way you can torture me into that shape. And it turns out that an overwhelming majority of the possible maps are non-physical in this sense. So you have to hunt carefully to identify the physical ones. So how is this done? Well, we have a method, a Monte Carlo method, which I think the people who introduced it, people like Henri and Grasberger and lots of people do it, where we grow a chain. Okay, we take a contact map, physical or not, and we grow a chain of n residues or n balls connected by the teeth or strings. We grow a chain using the contact map as a go potential, a target potential, to draw the chain towards a structure whose contact map is going to be that one. Yeah. Again, this is non-trivial, so I would rather not get into it, but you know, I can give you references where this is described. So we move in contact map space, generate a low energy contact map, and then we try to grow a chain whose contact map is this.
No.
We have just a modeling residue by sphere. Because for us, contact is in terms of the distance between the C alphas. So it's effectively modeling the residue as the amino acid as a sphere centered on the C alpha.
But there's difference between, for instance, can you get a physical map for poles on the chain versus a physical map for amino acids?
Absolutely. And that difference at this point is swept under the rug. Okay? So we restrict ourselves to this. Our definition of a physical map is one for which you can construct a chain of strings and balls, which is a real chain in three-dimensional structure whose contact map is that. Okay? I care about the self-avoidance of these beads, but I don't care about the self-avoidance of the large large or small side chains that are sticking out of them. Well, the distance between two, C alpha contact, we allow 8.5. So there is something like 8 angstroms that we don't let them bump into each other, 7, I don't remember. It's a hard chord.
So when you do this, you get things at roughly the right
radius. Yeah. I'll show you. Okay, if you want. This is one particular protein from the PDB. This is its native structure. So, for example, you take it and you clutter it by noise. So it looks like this. And of course, it's non-physical. Now you use the noisy one as your target for this procedure, and you recover a contact map that looks like this. Okay? So the procedure filtered the noise away. It kept the physical contacts. I'm not sure, was this too fast? Anyone wants it to repeat?
Could you just show the original and the final?
That's the next step. Original and final. Okay, so the original and the final are not the same, but within my ability to align them, they are fairly similar.
Maybe I can understand this better.
Yeah.
What is so special about proteins? Does your theorem apply to RNA coding also?
I would guess so. My theorem applies to bad approximations for a complicated potential. This is my guess.
You can use a pair contact for RNA and space pairing.
Okay. Yeah, so probably it's. So let me, I have a few more minutes, not sure. Yeah, so let me just indicate how these inequalities are solved. It's really not that complicated. The inequalities are linear. The energy is a linear function of these W's. So when I say that this has to be less than that, what is meant that there is a vector X. When it's dotted into a vector, I represent this W as a vector, this has to be positive. So if you give me P decoy maps, I construct out of them P such inequalities that have to be satisfied for the native one to be the lowest energy. And then the question is, when someone gives you such P such inequalities, can you solve them? And there is a procedure called perceptron learning, which I will not go into, which is an iterative procedure. You just let it run, and if there is a solution, it will find it in finite time. If there is no solution, then we have a twist on this perceptron learning business, such that when there is no solution to these inequalities, it will raise a flag at some point and say that there is no solution. There is a quantity we calculate as we use the perceptron, which grows monotonously, and when it exceeds a critical value, that's a signal that there is no solution to the inequalities.
And that's a mathematical proof.
Lemmas, theorems, the works. Yeah, epsilon and delta. Everything is, that's a tight theorem. So the results of this. The way this is done, by the way, is the following. You take a guess for these W's, and use that guess to generate some low-energy decoys, the way I indicated. Solve the resulting inequalities. You have 10,000 inequalities, you solve them. That gives you a new set of W's, somewhat improved energy function, and your native structure has the lowest energy. You use these W's to construct a new set of another 10,000 low-energy decoys, throw them into the game, try to solve 20,000 inequalities, and you still succeed. But it becomes harder and harder. By the time you get up to you generate something like 300,000 of these decoys, you cannot solve inequalities. You don't need all 300,000. You can select 1,000 of them, and that's an unsolvable set. But to get that 1,000, you really have to work a lot. So we have proved this way, by this definition, with Richard's caveat of physical maps, physical structures, that there is no set of 210 contact energy parameters that will stabilize the native map of Crumbin. So what you see here, this is the parameter Q, which is the fraction of native contacts, and this is a histogram And the bad news is that the low energy guys are not neither very close nor very far from Crumbin. They are regular. I mean, here is one. You stop at some point after 300,000 and you haven't succeeded to learn, but you still have some value of these W's. Yeah, you could do that. You could pick some W from this procedure or some. Pick the Miyazawa Jernigan, it doesn't matter. Sorry? Yeah, yeah, but I mean, you throw them away when you calculate Q. I mean, the obvious, trivial things we do. No, no, it's not. I mean, it's sort of in the middle. What I'm saying is that. Okay, random will be different. For a random, I think you get something like 0.20 or 25. I'm not sure what the number is. Something like that, typically, 30. So the point is, for example, this is a typical low energy map. I mean, one of these is this one is the native one, and the blue one is the low energy one. And this is what the structure looks like. It's compact. It's protein-like. Most experts, if you hit them with this, they will not tell you that this is a stupid decoy that was generated by one of these procedures. So the structures that one gets are protein-like and fair competitors and of lower energy than the native one. Okay, here is the summary. The bottom and the main point of the talk, that the pairwise contact potentials cannot stabilize the native fold of even a single protein against carefully selected physical decoys. This is what one should take away from this talk. Extensions, which I will not talk about, two-step potentials, instead of just contact, we tried to have one epsilon, one value of the energy when the distance is within one window, and another value when the distance is in a different window. So you go up to 420 parameters. Still cannot do it. Surface versus bulk, this is what I mentioned in response to Meran's question. If the two residues are buried inside and you can determine that from the map or on the surface, you assign different energies. Again, 420 doesn't help. Hydrophobic terms, you know who are the hydrophobic and hydrophilic amino acids, and you penalize a hydrophobic going out and a hydrophilic going in, doesn't help. Using decoys from threading, huh?
That's like a one-body term.
That's a one-body term, yeah. So you add it in. It's 20 more parameters.
Okay.
Yeah. You add more 20 parameters in the 210 or 230. We use decoys instead of this laborious way of generating them. We generated them in a cheaper way from threading, like what Baker was talking about. And there you generate decoys who are not good competitors, but you compensate by generating a very large number of them. And then you can still show that no go. This is the last thing. Shakhnovich referred to this in his last slide. This is something we are sort of doing together. And let me just tell you what it is. That's the last thing I'll mention. What I said was amino acid interaction. You can ask, what about atom-atom interaction? Go to an all-atom representation. And every kind of atom, of pair of atoms, write down a distance-dependent potential and break that distance into five windows or six windows, I don't remember. So for every pair of atoms, you have six numbers now you can play with. And it's atoms, not residues. And try to use the same kind of machinery to quote learn, because perceptrons learn, to learn a good atom-atom potential that will stabilize whatever protein G. And that's what they are trying to do. And they are at a stage now where it's very difficult to find decoys that violate the inequality. So maybe it's doable. I mean, my bet would be that it's again going to be negative. But this is the state of the art there. Okay, thanks very much. Well, okay, I mean, that was done without water. This thing with Shachnovich, they don't have explicitly water in there. Well, I mean, what you get is an effective, you calculate some potential. And the only restriction on that potential is that your native structure has a lower energy than all kinds of decoys.
No, but even if you find that you cannot do it, then people will tell you if you have a surface hydration kind of potential, then you could do it.
Of course, of course. I mean, and that's a valid statement. It could be that you cannot do it without explicitly putting water in, or in some very clever way implicitly, inducing some very long range interactions, which wasn't allowed. But I'm not saying that nature cannot fold proteins.
The number of dummy structures with the all atom representation would be much, much larger. I mean, you use a sort of a similar mechanism for generating the dummy structures, or how is that done?
Okay, again, in that effort, the main cost is to produce decoys. And if this thing fails, it's going to fail because on that account. So we do the various things. We try various ways of producing decoys. Some better, some worse, some slower, some faster, and we'll see how it goes. But again, you have to understand, if we prove that there is no solution, that's a hard result. If we find a solution, then you can start asking, maybe you didn't have good enough decoys. Right? So, and if we find a solution, by the way, and this is a twist I should add, I mean, really, it's and I stop. If we find a solution, quote, or a potential, such that when we use it, we can take this protein, unfold it, let it go, and it folds using this potential to the right structure, then I don't really care whether this is the, there are some esoteric decoys who would have gone below. So in this case, you have a test of success which is beyond satisfying the inequalities. I mean, if you see what I mean. Joachim. I sort of did. You take a contact map and you mess it up. You take an alpha helix and move it from here to there, take a beta sheet, move it from here to there, introduce some tertiary contacts by some rule. And check, this is fast. And check the energy with the current values of the contact parameter. Check the energy of this map. And if it's a low energy map, then you say, okay, let me now determine whether it's physical or not. The way to do that, I grow a chain using this map as the target. And at some point I stop. When I get sufficiently close, when I get a chain whose map is sufficiently close to the target, chances are that the resulting map will also be of low energy. Because you use the low energy one as a target. And for sure it's going to be physical. Because I generated a chain whose contact map is this. So I take that contact map as my decoy. Okay, and I do this a lot of times, and generate a lot of decoys, and now I use my perceptron to try to solve this new set of inequalities together with the old ones, and that gives me, if I succeed, a new set of parameters.
But sometimes your starting point is the native contact map.
Oh, you mean to generate the decoys?
Yeah.
Well, after a few hundred decoys, you lost all memory of that because your contact map is all over the place. I mean, the secondary structure. Yeah, you can. It's like in Monte Carlo. I mean, you start with all the spins up, but you know, if you run it long enough, you don't care. You forgot where you came from. Okay.